project that I'm going to talk to you today about is the REACH 2010 program, which in Chicago we were one of the over 40 communities that were funded. And as Keith mentioned, it was a coalition that had the African American churches and Latino churches on the south and west sides of Chicago, Access Community Health Network, which is the largest federally qualified health center organization in the country, and then me at the University of Illinois. Our goal was to increase knowledge about cancer, but also to increase screening in these two communities. So we were working in Chicago in some of the most disadvantaged communities, probably one in Chicago, but also in the nation. And when we started this, we started using peer advocates who came through the churches. The pastors and the priests recommended these women. We trained them, and we started at a very defined, within the congregations, and we did these educational sessions. And with our partner Access, we were able to provide them a service. They were able to get the screenings. So we were providing education, removing an access and a financial barrier, and we did it through peers in their congregations. And over the years, we moved out, which is the flip chart. But the education involved cancer facts, about risk factors, about the screening service, and we did breast self-examination demonstrations. And once we got out of the congregations, we've held them all across the city. We've done, you know, health fairs and all sorts of media, things through the, also in the church. But what we found, so we had the peers, and they were working in the population and in the community, and lots of women would say, sure, I'll go. But only 25% ended up going. And we had educated them, removed the access barrier, removed a financial barrier. So we said, what's going on here? So we looked in the literature, and this is about 4 years ago, and there were some articles from Harold Freeman showing that this patient navigation concept was working for similar populations in Harlem. So we decided we would pair our peer advocate with a patient navigator. So the patient navigator's role now was, once the woman made a commitment to go get a mammogram or a pap test, that the patient navigator's role was to get them there. They were going to do whatever it took, and we were hoping that our compliance would improve, and we also hoped the satisfaction with the care would improve. So patient navigators, sort of the word du jour, we're looking at the different types of activities. I mean, they were there to explain and help reinforce what they learned in the educational session, talk a little bit more in detail about the screening procedures. We have the patient navigators helping schedule appointments. So we worked, we had sort of adopt-a-clinics. We had the clinics give us some slots where we were able to, you know, sort of immediately give them times. But they made reminder phone calls. And as part of the navigation, we got bus tickets. We did all sorts of things, including go to the appointments with them. So the data that I'm going to present today is about a survey that we've done. So there's lots of patient navigator programs out there. I'm part of the NCI one, which is the formal assessment of, but there's not a lot of evidence documenting whether these are efficacious. So we did a survey of all the women who are eligible who had been referred and had some eligibility to get patient navigation from the patient navigators. So the survey question, we looked at what activities did the navigator perform. We got some history about their screening behavior. So did they ultimately end up getting the test, because that was really important. What were the activities that helped them attend the appointment, or what were the barriers for not attending the appointment? We also asked about their satisfaction with the navigator, the navigator's activities. Did they feel the navigator kept their information confidential? We asked about satisfaction with the service, and then demographics on the people that we're serving, including insurance, and did they have regular places of care. So we surveyed from February to this past September. My colleague Julie is an obsessive contactor, so we have an original letter, and we actually did little makeup bags that you get at the dollar store, which I would say are very effective. We did a reminder postcard, we did a second letter with a second survey, and then called them up to 3 times to try to get them to return the survey. We had about 19% returned because the address was wrong, so again, a pretty disenfranchised population. Right now we're at 40%, but we're in the process of those contacts for still a remainder through the end of September. So I hope our response rate had been about 55%, so I'm hoping to get that. We had more folks return that were Latina and got pap smears. But the results are really interesting, actually. So we actually had 8 or 9% return who didn't have any help from a navigator. But the biggest thing that they reported were the activities that they received were help scheduling appointments, the reminder calls. A good portion had discussions and more education about cancer and the test. And we had a lot of our navigators. I know, am I driving you crazy with this noise? It's kind of bad. How about if I just, I'm loud. and following up after their appointments. Too close, you think? Yeah. Okay. So what we can see is, and actually this is bared out with, we probably have, in the REACH program is 8 years, and I probably have 20,000 surveys. Our populations are very different. In Chicago, our Latina population that we've been serving is younger, higher levels of marriage, but way less educated than their African-American counterparts. They're also have much lower levels of income. And really interestingly, the Latina community that we're serving, and this is also in the 20,000 surveys, about 72% don't have insurance. And this is, you know, pretty typical for Chicago, whereas the African-American population that we're working with, about 32%. So the state and across the country is about 15. So a very, very difficult population. But the good news is the navigators worked. So if you remember, I said we were at about 25% showing up. We bumped that up to, on average, across the two, to 67%. So that is a really good thing, and that's what we were hoping to see. And we see the same for the pap test. The reasons that they say that helped them was the reminder call was important. They didn't have to wait too long, so we had those available appointments, and we worked with the clinic, and as part of our collaborative, we partnered with somebody who was able to give the services, and having the test explained to them was very useful. And the reasons they didn't get their test, they report, because we had a portion of people, that's why I think the makeup bag works, is that, you know, they didn't actually get the service, but they still returned the survey. that they forgot, can't afford it, which probably is more through, I don't know, because we gave them free care, lack of child care or no time. And there was differences between the two populations. But the other thing I do think that was interesting, and I don't think there's a race effect really. I think ultimately what was interesting is we went and studied what increased the likelihood. So helping schedule the appointment improved with an odds ratio of close to 4, the reminder calls, an odds ratio of close to 3, listening to their concerns, 3. But with each additional activity that the navigator performed, and some of them, the range was up to like 15. So the more sort of the more you did to help support them, the more likely they were going to go. So it takes a lot of effort, 15 different contacts of some level to get them to get a pap or a mammogram. We found is a very significant and striking finding. So in conclusion, ultimately it looks like right now, but we're still collecting data, that it was more successful with the African American women. But these findings demonstrate that, one, the navigator activities worked because the compliance rate didn't improve, but it also needs to be pretty intensive, and that improves the likelihood of completing a women's health service. Okay, questions? Yeah, I'm back.
Hi. Great job.
Well, we weren't as, excuse me, we weren't as time efficient as I had hoped, and I think that's probably my fault on not getting here on time. But do we have any questions from the audience? There's a microphone in the middle. Yes, over here.
Thank you.
If there are no other questions from the floor, I have... Okay, go ahead.
They are available online. If you look up the Hospital Council of Northern California, the 2004 assessment's posted. It's evolving to a different process now. There's going to be a web-based set of data available to be updated. But it's legislated at a state level, and it essentially is looking at health outcomes. And it doesn't actually require you to address interventions, just to assess need. Does that answer what you're looking at? There's a person here who's even more expert about it than I am, right here in the audience, Gloria Thornton.
Any more questions? I just have one for the full panel. One of the underlying themes that I've been hearing is sort of a balance of patient community need between accessibility of the service in terms of placement of clinics versus transportation and the getting and taking, and third is the accessibility in internal operations. That's a big kahuna to attack. For those that are just considering how are they going to take their first steps, maybe have done a needs assessment or basically have the day-to-day knowledge to know what the issues are, do you have suggested first step that has a higher likelihood of success so they can build upon successes?